On our calendar is in the matter of the civil commitment of Mitchell Lee Kinney. The file number is A201007. The appellate may begin at this time.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Brandon Basie. I'm an assistant attorney general, and I represent the appellant, the Commissioner of Human Services, in this matter. The commitment appeal panel erred when it granted Mr. Kenny's petition for provisional discharge, despite the fact that not a single witness, expert or otherwise, other than Mr. Kenny himself, testified that in favor of provisional discharge. The panel, believing Mr. Kenny should be in a different treatment phase than he is currently in, provisionally discharged him to receive the treatment that it claimed MSOP, quote, failed to provide. In making this order, the panel applied the incorrect legal standard and effectively directed Mr. Kenny's treatment, something that the panel lacks the authority to do. The panel also made findings of fact that were inconsistent with the record as a whole. The panel's order should be reversed and Mr. Kenny's petition for provisional discharge should be denied.
All right. I just want to narrow down the issues here because I think the record's very clear, and I think the findings are that Mr. Kinney's doing quite well in his treatment program at MSOP. Am I correct on that?
I think that's correct, Your Honor. I don't think the commissioner's ever denied that Mr. Kenny is doing quite well.
And I think there's no denial that he is that he is ready for some reintegration processes. And in this case, isn't it just a matter of how that's done and in terms of what setting he is in when he does that reintegration and how that takes place?
Your Honor, I disagree. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I would just disagree slightly with the characterization of the record in the sense of, I think that there were some people like Dr. Lovett did testify that he was ready for reintegration and that there was a common thread that reintegration is something that he is a critical need for Mr. Kenny. And in fact, the panel agreed it's a critical need for him. I don't necessarily agree that there was a unanimous belief that he was ready for phase three. His primary therapist testified that she believed that he was ready to start the process of that, but not that he was ready for phase three necessarily. Mr. Schiffer testified he was on the cusp of phase three. But putting that aside, Your Honor, I think that it is correct that reintegration was a very large part of the evidence in this case. I
want to make sure we're using the terminology right, because there's reintegration as it takes place within CPS, where you have outings, and then there's a therapeutic community that helps him with each of these outings. He can discuss them and decide how he's doing, correct? With each of these outings. But that's different than the reintegration that would take place in phase three. So,
correct, Your Honor.
I make it real clear that when we're talking about reintegration, it's a more general term, I think, than phase three.
Correct. Yes. So reintegration is just part of phase three. There are other parts of phase three, but I think the reason I brought that up was because reintegration opportunities at CPS generally aren't offered to clients until they reach phase three. But I would like to be clear, Your Honor, that there is a fundamental difference between reintegration community outings within the CPS setting as opposed to a community outing on provisional discharge. The undisputed testimony in this case was as Mr. Schiffer testified, who was crucial in developing the CPS program, is that CPS community outings are focused on treatment. They're done with a treatment focus. The client has to have a treatment reason as to why he or she needs to go into the community. He has to come up with a plan. He has to meet with the security counselors at MSOP who might be escorting him, security counselors who are trained in MSOP's treatment program. He has to outline the triggers that he might be involved in that he might see. And then he has to go on the outing, and then there's a 15-minute debriefing session where he discusses how his treatment fits into the outing, and then he has to bring that back to his group. Whereas the testimony in the hearing was that outings on provisional discharge aren't treatment focused. Outings on provisional discharge are meant to just see what Mr. Kenny needs on a daily basis. I don't deny that at the beginning of his of the community outings on provisional discharge, there would be a reintegration agent likely with him. But a reintegration agent is different than a security counselor. There was the testimony was that they're not trained in MSOP's program. They're not focused on the treatment aspect of the system. And what every expert said, in this case, Mr. Schiffer, Dr. Scharf, and Dr. Lovett, all stated that what Mr. Kenny needs at this point before he's provisionally discharged are those CPS therapeutic community outings. And they were unequivocal in those opinions, Your Honors. They were specifically asked multiple times whether the provisional discharge community outings would be sufficient for Mr. Kenny. And every time all of the experts opined that those outings simply aren't what Mr. Kenny needs at this time. Mr. Kenny is someone who
Counsel, counsel, you talked about all the expert testimony, but wouldn't you agree, or don't you know that of course it's within the purview of the panel to reject an expert's testimony? The fact is the expert isn't the decision maker in this matter.
Correct, Your Honor. And I the commissioner isn't arguing that the panel is, required to accept every expert. But I think what the case law is clear about is that first, expert opinions are highly crucial to commitment cases. The commissioner cited the U.S. Supreme Court of Addington, where the Supreme Court stated that commitment cases, while there might be some factual issues in them, commitment cases are really about what facts mean. And we need we need psychologists and psychiatrists to say what facts mean in a treatment sense. And so and the Minnesota legislature has identified the need for experts, as the statute specifically has the panel appointing an expert in every single one of these cases. And so, I guess it's May. They may appoint examiners in these cases. And so I would agree, Judge Kalatowski, that the panel does not have to follow the experts' opinions. But in a case like this, where all of the experts are unanimous, this isn't a case where there were competing experts and the panel had to choose between which one it found more credible. This isn't a case where a respondent has identified some kind of fact that the experts were not informed on or were not knowledgeable of. This is a case where all of the experts took into account the considerable progress that Mr. Kenny has made and stated, yes, he's made this progress, but he still has some work to do. And that work that he has to do needs to be done in the CPS setting. And so, Your Honor.
Is there any finding that you can point to? I mean, there's 34 findings that the panel made. Is there any finding that you believe is clearly erroneous?
Yes, Your Honor. I think. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yes, Your Honor. I think in our brief, I think there's two critical findings that the panel found were clearly erroneous. The first finding is finding that provisional discharge can provide the reintegration opportunities that Mr. Kenny requires. And I think I've explained that to the court why the commissioner believes that that's clearly erroneous. The second finding, Your Honor, outlined in our brief was that the provisional discharge plan can provide adequate protection of the public and enable Mr. Kenny to successfully adjust to the community. There's only two people in this case that were qualified to opine on risk. That was Dr. Scharf and Dr. Lovett. Both of those experts in this case reviewed the records and conducted actuarial measures, looked at risk, looked at the provisional discharge plan, and determined that this plan could not adequately protect the public because Mr. Kenny, before he goes on provisional discharge, requires those gradual reintegration opportunities at CPS. And so because of his entrenched pedophilia, because he hasn't had those experiences, consistent experiences with pubescent and prepubescent individuals that are within his attraction template and his offense history, because he hasn't had those experiences, that a PD plan to the community would not protect the public, nor would it allow him to adjust to the community. Your Honor, I think in this case, one of the things I'd like to get back to, Your Honor, is apart from the clearly erroneous findings of fact, is that the panel simply just misapplied the law. And in this case, Your Honor, the panel was pretty clear that it agreed with the experts and that it agreed that he needed reintegration opportunities. But the panel was also clear that it disagreed with MSOP's treatment decisions in what phase it was in. the panel in this case included, I think there's two crucial, critical statements from the panel that show that what the panel was really doing was directing treatment in this case rather than simply applying the factors. And those two quotes, the first is on page 12 of its opinion, and it was talking about the reintegration opportunities, and it said, as MSOP failed to provide this important treatment need while Mr. Kenny was residing at CPS, MSOP through its reintegration agents will have to locate an outpatient program and living situation that will provide this important need. The second quote, Your Honor, is on the following page where it said, although living at CPS in theory could provide more reintegration opportunities, it has not done so thus far. Both experts identified the lack of reintegration, a critical need at this point in time, a need that has not and will not be addressed at CPS until petitioner reaches phase three. These two quotes show that one, the panel agreed that reintegration opportunities are necessary for Mr. Kenny. And two, it shows that the panel believed that Mr. Kenny wasn't in the proper phase of treatment. And this court and the and Minnesota statutes and other courts have held that provisional discharge and discharge because you believe someone is receiving inadequate treatment is not the province of the commitment courts. A commitment court and the panel looks at simply whether someone's ready for transfer, provisional discharge, or discharge, applies the statutory factors that are found in Minnesota law, and those statutes don't contemplate provisionally discharging someone because the panel believes that the person is receiving inadequate treatment. So therefore, while the panel veiled its decision as a provisional discharge, it's clear that the panel's order was based on its disagreement with the treatment phase in which Mr. Kenny was in at MSOP. Your Honors.
Well, can I just, before you go on from there, because one of the findings was that the commissioner and the county failed to provide clear and convincing evidence that provisional discharge is not appropriate. Do you agree that once the client here made a prima facie showing, the burden then was upon the commissioner to provide clear and convincing evidence that the provisional discharge wasn't appropriate?
Yes, Your Honor, the commissioner agrees that once there's a prima facie showing, it's the commissioner's burden to prove by clear and convincing evidence that provisional discharge is not appropriate. You know, I think the commissioner believes that there wasn't a prima facie showing, but that's not on appeal, and the commissioner's not challenging that. But it's hard for the commissioner to understand what more evidence she can put in the record at this point to meet her clear and convincing standard. Clear and convincing is not beyond a reasonable doubt. It is highly probable. And in this case, we have three qualified experts who all opine that provisional discharge is just not appropriate at this point in time in treatment. And so if the evidence in this case is insufficient to meet that standard, it feels to the commissioner that the panel's holding her to more of a beyond a reasonable doubt standard than a clear and convincing standard.
Well, what is our standard of review when reviewing that particular finding? And I think it's a finding, it's a legal and, isn't that a legal and factual determination?
Yes, Your Honor. So I think to answer your question, the panel's review is clearly erroneous in this case, at least on that issue. This court recently in the Edwards decision, it's a published decision by this court, stated that the standard of review for this court is clearly erroneous of determining whether the panel's decision was supported by adequate facts. I will say, though, however, the commissioner's position is on the legal issue of whether the panel applied the appropriate statutory standard is de novo. And I think Edwards even stands for that statutory interpretation and whether a statute is applied correctly is a de novo review by this court.
Well, so the issue, and I want to clarify that because our review is to determine whether there is sufficient evidence to constitute clear and convincing evidence. I mean, whether that standard is met. And that's a de novo review, whether that evidence is sufficient?
No, Your Honor, I think Edwards says that determining whether the Edwards court is saying reviewing a CAHPS decision is a clearly erroneous review, and the clearly erroneous review is looking at the record as a whole to determining whether that evidence supports the panel's decision. And in the Edwards case specifically, Your Honor, the court applied a de novo review and determined that the evidence did not support the panel's position. In that case, the panel had ordered a transfer of an individual. The panel looked at the evidence. And in that case, there was even an expert who opined in favor of transfer, and the court said, no, that's not sufficient. But what I am saying, Your Honor, is the issue of whether the CAP went outside of its statutory authority and applied the incorrect legal standard or directed treatment, that's a de novo review, Your Honor. I'll address any other questions you have in rebuttal unless there are other questions from the court at this time.
Any other questions? No. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
The respondent may proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jennifer Tone. I'm the attorney for the respondent, Mitchell Kenny. In this case, reintegration was kind of a critical issue for the panel. And we did have testimony from Mr. Schiffer, Dr. Lovett, and Dr. Scharf saying that Mr. Kenny needs reintegration. Mr. Kenny himself testified to that fact as well. And I think the analysis engaged in by the panel was, What does reintegration look like at CPS, and what does it look like on provisional discharge? The panel concluded that reintegration can be provided in both settings. It's different. It should be different. A provisional discharge is considered a reduction in custody. Mr. Schiffer, Dr. Lovett, Dr. Scharf all testified in their clinical opinion Mr. Kenny needed the intensity of that residential inpatient setting of CPS. The panel, in its findings, specifically rejected that opinion. Those three witnesses compared provisional discharge to throwing Mr. Kenny off the deep end or something to that effect. The court specifically said no, that undervalues his substantial treatment progress. And there is a plethora of evidence that talks about the substantial treatment progress from all three of those witnesses.
But is there anything in the record you can point to where anyone, a treater, anyone has said that that how you do this should be just an immediate transfer to phase three? I read the record last night, and it looked like everyone's agreeing he should be reintegrated. Everyone's agreeing he's doing great. But the difference is how you do this and whether this provisional discharge is premature. So it seemed like this is a case where everyone seemed to be on the same page. So as to how this is done, is that a treatment mechanism that should be handled by the experts rather than the court substituting its own opinion as to how this should be done? I mean, is that really what we're arguing, is how it should be done?
I think you're spot on with that analysis. It's how it should be done. The three witnesses said it should be done at CPS. And their reason for that was that he needs this gradual exposure to reintegration. And there was a plenty of evidence from Mr. Scott Halverson, who oversees the provisional discharge client program part in the community. And we've got the MSOP policies in the record as to how those clients are actually managed. And
why isn't this then? I mean, if we have everyone agreeing that this is how it should be done, how can the panel substitute its own judgment as to how it should be done? For that of what appears to be almost a unanimous opinion as to how it should be done?
The short answer is that is a legal determination, not a psychological expert determination. The statute.
How is the propriety of treatment a legal determination? I mean, the thing that I'm concerned about is that when the panel rejects all of the expert testimony, which says he needs reintegration through the phase three protocols, what record evidence remains that supports the conclusion that he can be reintegrated by a provisional discharge as opposed to a phase three? Because I don't see any testimony about that in the record.
I would point the court to Dr. Lovett's testimony. So when I was asking her questions about how she formulates her opinion, one of the methods that she uses is risk, need, responsivity, R&R model. Under that model, we identify a client's level of risk, we identify their treatment needs, and then the responsivity piece is how do we deliver treatment to match that client's needs in a way that will ensure public safety. Dr. Lovett testified she follows that model when she formulates her opinion. She conducted her risk assessment. She considered static, dynamic, and protective risk factors. She put it all together in a nice summary and said, when I consider all of these things in my comprehensive risk assessment analysis, I find Mr. Kenny to be at average risk. Under that R&R model, the theory is the highest risk level needs the highest level of intensity for treatment and supervision. So high risk, inpatient treatment, supervision. Lower risk, average risk, equates to outpatient community-based supervision and treatment. So we have direct testimony from Dr. Lovett, which actually contradicts that clinical opinion that he needs to be in CPS to do reintegration.
Well, could I go back? Because, you know, I'm looking at the two considerations that the court is to consider under Larson v. Jessen. And the second one is whether the conditions of the provisional discharge plan will provide a reasonable degree of protection to the public. And that's what you're addressing here. But here's the next part of this, which I thought that all of the experts in this case spoke about, which is, and will enable the committed person to adjust successfully to the community. And they all, and I don't know if they talked or if this is just part of the psychological jargon, they all talked about the fact that to put him in provisional discharge without these mechanisms that they've created within CPS and the therapeutic community is like throwing him in the deep end of the pool. So they were looking at what can we do to maximize his success once he is in phase three, because as noted, I think it was Mr. Halverson, people do get revoked and then they're back to go sometimes if they fail in phase three. So it seems like to me there's a built-in incentive for them to maximize the possibilities of success for people in phase three.
Perhaps there is that built-in incentive, but that's not part of this statutory criteria. You know, if this were a case talking about transfer out to CPS, that is one of the explicit statutory criteria, which setting is best for the client. That's not one of the explicit criteria in the provisional discharge statute. I would also note that the court, again, having all the evidence in front of it, the way the reintegration model is set up at CPS is very similar to the model for provisional discharge. In a day-to-day practical basis, life at CPS is very similar to life on provisional discharge. We have evidence from Dr. Lovett comparing the two, and Mr. Kenny is compliant with life at CPS and those expectations.
Counsel, one of the problems that I have with the with the CAP panel's order is that it seems to reject all of the expert testimony and not piecemeal what it's crediting from expert testimony as opposed to what it is rejecting from the expert testimony. So what do we have left if we're rejecting all of the expert testimony, which is essentially what the panel says? What do we have left that's in the record that supports a provisional discharge, that satisfies the statutory requirements for a provisional discharge?
I don't believe that the panel rejected the expert opinions in full. They accepted portions of the opinions and rejected the conclusion that the expert reached. So for example, provisional discharge has a graduated model of reintegration just like CPS does. And so when an expert talks about he needs this gradual model of reintegration, that is also provided on provisional discharge. It looks different, but it's still there. And so I don't believe that the court actually rejected everything every expert said. They agreed with some of the facts testified to by the experts and some of those opinions. They just rejected that ultimate conclusion based on the court finding that that conclusion it undervalues.
Okay, could I ask you this though? What in this record supports the conclusion that he is ready for immediate provisional discharge?
We have his substantial treatment progress, which there's a lot of evidence supporting that. We have Dr. Lovett's opinion under, again, using that risk need responsivity model of risk analysis, that he is an average level of risk. We have the MSOP carefully crafted provisional discharge plan that it wants clients to use for provisional discharge. We have the policies and the practical testimony from Mr. Halverson about how clients are actually monitored in the community and how treatment is provided to them. They also use
But Dr. Lovett, I mean, you do refer to Dr. Lovett's opinion repeatedly, and she testified that without information about where he's going to be employed or what his living situation is or what his social situation is going to be, these are not, you know, minuscule details of a provisional discharge plan. These are critical factors that are vital to the success of any client who's going to be released on a provisional discharge, and none of that's been decided. So, I mean, what is the evidence that the provisional discharge plan that has been proposed is sufficient to protect the public?
I would relate back to the case law, the Barber case and the Crop case, that says this provisional discharge plan provided by the MSOP executive director to clients is sufficient at this stage in the proceedings. Although those details would be helpful, they're not required per the current case law. And then we also have, and now I lost my train of thought, I'm sorry.
Sorry about that.
we also have testimony from all three, Mr. Schiffer and both doctors, about things that Mr. Kenny is able to do independently, which bode for his appropriateness for provisional discharge. He can monitor, or he can process situations independently. He's actively engaged in treatment. He works collaboratively with his treatment providers, yet he owns his treatment. He's taken ownership of that in a sense that he knows what he needs to do. He gets it done. He's not relying on the external controls of CPS to help him make the progress he's made.
I don't question his progress in treatment. And it looks to me from looking at the record that he's doing exceedingly well in the program. The thing that I'm concerned about also about his treatment is that there's a significant level of anxiety that is being managed actively through these the very intensive treatment that's provided inpatient at the MSOP. And it doesn't look to me from the record that those anxiety factors are addressed in a provisional discharge program. Can you talk about that?
Certainly. So I think the testimony was that Mr. Kenny recently completed some kind of psychoeducational module to help him work on reducing his anxiety. We have a lot of testimony from Dr. Scharf that says Mr. Kenny has made significant progress reducing his anxiety. He's more resilient. He's more stable and calm. That's been observed across various MSOP settings. In that psychoeducational module, he created a specific mental health plan that he's been applying. He's repeatedly observed using techniques to help mindfulness and sensate focus and some of those kinds of things to help manage his anxiety. And it's been a noticeable improvement that's documented both in records and testimony. He's also—
But no testing in non-clinical settings, right?
Well, there was one trip. So Mr. Kenny was selected to go to MSOP Moose Lake to talk to clients up there. And this was something that the court paid specific attention to. So he stopped at a fast food restaurant with the other clients and the staff to get some food during this trip. And the record shows that Mr. Kenny was, you know, in some kind of panic-induced anxiety state and had to flee the restaurant. That's not what Mr. Kenny testified to. He said, "I was not in an anxiety-driven state. I was done eating. I looked around. I saw that this person is in my attraction template. I followed my relapse prevention plan. I notified the others. Nobody was still eating. There was no reason for us to be there. I just asked the group to leave. I followed my relapse prevention plan." The court specifically credited Mr. Kenny's testimony on that point. And all Mr. Schiffer, Dr. Lovett, Dr. Scharf all said, you know, gosh, he had this one trip where he had this panic-induced state and freaked out and had to leave. And that's not the fact that the panel found. they found he handled it appropriately.
Could I ask you this? Is there anything in this record that contradicts the opinion of apparently every expert involved that this request for provisional discharge was premature?
Again,
is there any evidence that contradicts that?
I think it's the combination of the evidence the panel considered: substantial treatment progress, his average risk, the overlap between life at CPS and life on provisional discharge.
So you just let me nail this down, because I don't want you to go through all those things you mentioned before. So that even though there's no opinion by anyone involved in this case that this is not premature, that he is ready for immediate provisional discharge, the you believe that the panel can substitute its own judgment on that issue just using the evidence that was produced?
My position is that is a legal determination, and the court is entitled and has the exclusive purview to make that determination. Psychologists and witnesses help inform the court. The court is not compelled to accept that opinion, and it's based on the comprehensive evidence in the record, not one fact.
All right. Is there some case you can refer us to where the panel has rejected every expert? I mean, obviously, if there was one expert in this case that had said, I think he's ready, and the judge or the panel rejected, you know, 15 other experts and accepted the one, we would obviously affirm that, I think, because that's the court gets to pick which expert they want to believe.
Yeah.
But can the court reject all experts and come up with its own conclusions?
Yes, this court has done that in Ray Kirchhoff. So that case went up to the Court of Appeals twice. The first time up, the Court of Appeals remanded for more specific findings. On the second appeal, the court affirmed the panel's granting of a provisional discharge with no witness supporting a provisional discharge.
Any other questions?
No.
All right.
Thank you.
You have 5 minutes for a rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. There's just a few things that I'd like to address in my rebuttal. Counsel spoke about the risk needs responsivity model from and testimony from Dr. Lovett. Dr. Lovett did testify to that, but this idea that Dr. Lovett then opined that he should be in the most restrictive type setting is just not the case. He's at CPS. CPS is a less restrictive setting than within the secure perimeter at MSOP, and she opined, you know, that he should be starting to do some reintegration opportunities. What she didn't say was that he should be in a lower level of a setting, of secure setting or non-secure setting on provisional discharge. You know, I think counsel spent a lot of time talking about the progress that Mr. Kenny's made in treatment. Like I said in my initial remarks, Your Honors, the commissioner isn't disputing that. The commissioner and neither did the experts in this case. The experts all took into consideration the progress that Mr. Kenny has made in treatment, but all acknowledged that these couple experiences in the community is just not sufficient at this time for someone who has such an entrenched pedophilia as Mr. Kenny. And Mr. Kenny, you know, talked about the second trip into the community that there was some question about how well it went. But I think it's undisputed that the first trip in the community, I think that the record demonstrates that there were some issues on the first trip or there was some anxiety. And so I think that what the experts are saying is like, these two experiences are just insufficient at this time for someone who hasn't tested those types of stimuli and experiences and someone who has these attractions to put his treatment into work.
Okay, I want to deal with the legal issue though. And I mean, we're well aware of all the facts here, but as I hear the respondent and she's citing the Kirchhoff case, that the panel is free to disregard the ultimate conclusions of the experts and basically take whatever testimony they've given and come up with their own conclusion as to the ultimate issue. Is that an incorrect statement of law, or is that correct?
I would say it's not entirely correct, Your Honor. I would agree with her that the Kirchhoff case, Ms. Tone and I were both the lawyers on the Kirchhoff case. We're both very familiar with the case. I'm not denying that the Kirchhoff case, it was three experts who all opined the provisional discharge was inappropriate, and the panel granted provisional discharge and the Court of Appeals affirmed. I will say that that case is different than this case. Mr. Kirchhoff had been doing a number of community outings in that case. The panel had made some specific findings that it believed that the experts' opinions were, I believe it said, equivocal, and some other findings as to that. You know, the commissioner disagrees with the Kirchhoff opinion, but acknowledges its existence, I think. In this case, Your Honor, you know, what I hear respondents saying, or what I hear the question is that if the panel, whatever the panel decides to do, that this court can't sit as an error correcting court. And this court, that's what this court does, is that it corrects errors. And that's what this court did in the Edwards decision.
Well, and I just want to paraphrase what I think the argument, or at least what the panel did here, is they basically said, we've heard all your testimony, we've heard all the evidence, you've got the burden of proof, commissioner, you failed to meet that burden by clear and convincing evidence. And that's what we're hanging our hat on here. You had the burden, you didn't meet it. Why is that erroneous? If they can accept or reject the expert's opinions, and they said we just don't buy it, why is that clearly erroneous?
Your Honor, I think it's overstating it to say that the panel can simply accept and reject experts' opinions. I think that the panel has to accept and reject opinions, but it has to be based on the evidence in the record. They have to identify specific things in the record. We cite in our brief, Your Honor, that it is, there are cases where this court has said that the evidence doesn't support the panel's conclusions as to expert testimony. In fact, that was a decision that this court did in Edwards, where it found that the panel in Edwards, the panel credited one of the doctor's testimony who opined, in that case it was transfer, not provisional discharge. The transfer was appropriate, and the court said the record simply doesn't support that expert's opinion. And so in this case as well, Your Honor, as I stated initially, it's unclear what more evidence the commissioner has to put in to meet a clear and convincing standard, other than three unanimous opinions from experts whose opinions weren't undercut by lack of information, or that the panel had adequate reasons to reject them. For those reasons, Your Honor, the commissioner would respectfully request that the panel reverse the panel's decision. Thank you.
Counsel, Dr. Lovett specifically said this was a close case or a close call. To what extent then does the panel look at the same facts and come to a different conclusion than Dr. Lovett?
Your Honor, to answer your question, I think that the panel has to look at the evidence as a whole in the record. And yes, Dr. Lovett said it was a close call, but she ultimately opined that provisional discharge wasn't appropriate. Dr. Scharf said a provisional discharge wasn't appropriate. Mr. Schiffer said provisional discharge wasn't appropriate. His primary therapist said he should be doing, that he would benefit from doing the things in phase three at CPS. And so while, you know, Dr. Lovett did say it's a close call, the evidence in the record in this case, Your Honor, the vast weight of the evidence does not support the panel's conclusion.
Can I ask a follow-up question about Kirchhoff, counsel? It looks to me from the Kirchhoff opinion that the panel in that case had a significant amount of record evidence about behavioral compliance within the community. Is that the case? Was the client in that case in the community and there was evidence of his compliance in the community?
Yes, Mr. Kirchhoff. Well, he was still at CPS, so he was still within the MSOP, you know, their non-secure or their unlocked facility. But Mr. Kirchhoff, if memory serves, he had been doing a number of community outings. I think Mr. Kirchhoff had been doing a number of community outings, and then those kind of got reduced based on a change in the treatment protocols. But he was still doing at least, I think, like three or four outings a quarter or something to that effect. He was doing outings in the community and had been doing those without much issue behavioral-wise.
So the panel had that evidence when it made the decision to disregard the expert's opinion in Kirchhoff, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Counsel, very well briefed and argued. We will take the matter under advisement, and we appreciate your arguments today, and they were very helpful to us. Thank you. Thank you both.
Thank you.